Last week, the 12th anniversary of the Rwandan genocide came and went without much notice in the Canadian media. Our press has found a new obsession. Newspapers, magazines, television, and radio, when they weren't dissecting the Canucks' failure to make the playoffs, were packed with news, interviews, special features, and talk about Afghanistan. 6 months ago, when the decisions were being made, it was hard to find any information at all about Canada's role in Afghanistan. Now, with the deployment a secure fact on the ground, Afghanistan is every newsroom's tsunami for 2006. Last week, scarcely an hour went by without some new item from Afghanistan: a funeral, a rocket attack, newly injured Canadian soldiers, the muzzling of General Hillier, and of course the monotonous simulation of debate among the old boys in the new minority parliament. As a rule of thumb, you can usually tell when you are the target of a propaganda campaign. You seem to be standing in a steady stream of what appears to be information, only to discover that it has a theme, a single conclusion, endlessly repeated, over and over again. The main theme of this current verbal glut is to, quote, educate the public, unquote, in itself often a euphemism for indoctrination. The idea is that we are, in Afghanistan, defending ourselves against Al-Qaeda by ensuring that strong democratic government will never allow the country to be used as a terrorist haven again. That's the line. Canadian governments rarely have the stamina for the kind of long-term ideological brainwashing efforts that we see in full-fledged tyrannies. So we can be reasonably sure that this mind-numbing attempt to educate us will be over soon. All we need to do is counter the indoctrination gambit with a gambit of our own. While our press gorges on this highly directional stream of political tidbits from Afghanistan, I like to ask what else is going on in some dark, unmentionable part of the world, like the Congo, for instance, or San Francisco's Museum of Modern Art. Shelja Patel is a Kenyan Indian poet and spoken word artist. In this month's Pambazuka News, she has described an installation by her friend Wangechi Mutu, also from Kenya, called The Chief's Lair is a Bloody Mess. One wall of the white box gallery space has been gouged with dozens of small holes like gunshot wounds, tinged with red pigment. Three chairs dominate the center of the room, poised on extended, spindly stilt legs. A bottle of wine hangs over each one, drips on the chair, and spills on the floor, drying to a sticky, odorous bloodstain. These thrones are a satire on Western global hegemony, Patel quotes. A leader can sit on his seat and tell people to go out and fight the wars he has created, end quote. Yet the ease with which the same seats could be toppled as they wobble on their perches, she says in her own voice, suggests the precarious base of military dominance. Neither Patel nor Mutu is from the Congo, but Congo-Kinshasa is no stranger to military dominance. Joseph Kabila was a major general in the army when he succeeded his father, Laurent Kabila, who was killed by one of his bodyguards in January 2001. More than 3 million people have died due to conflict in the region since 1998, most as a result of hunger and preventable diseases. Patel writes that beauty and horror are the two words most frequently used about the Mutu opus. She creates collaged images of women, using clippings from fashion magazines, news magazines, and porn magazines, which feature, she's asserted, the most realistic brown skin. Smooth, shiny arms that end in manicured talons, sexy stiletto-shod legs, emerge from bodies which are continents of mineral, wood, plant, forest, flesh, rock, jewel, feather. Close up, we see that each of these bodies is mutilated in some way, amputated, pierced, shattered, bleeding. Back in the Congo, the International Crisis Group says that even though the civil war is over, 30,000 people a month still die from it. According to Refugees International, several months after the onset of a crisis that displaced 150,000 people in central Katanga in the Democratic Republic of Congo, the humanitarian situation is beginning to improve. The presidential election, originally scheduled in Congo-Kinshasa for March 20th of this year, and the legislative elections, originally scheduled for April 30th, have both been postponed until June 18th. In Mutu's collage, Bloody Old Head Games, a tiny figure, a half-female, half-bird, perches on the elbow of a gigantic standing woman with scars and dark patches where we would expect to see breasts. A pistol in the hand of the avian woman points directly into the skull of the main figure, spews an explosion of red and brown particles. The eye moves down the picture to a girdle of pubic hair that morphs into long, dangling strands of a grass skirt over a leg raised as if to dance. Mutu plays a head game with the viewer, challenges our perceptions, seduces and frightens, lures and repels. Amnesty International notes that, quote, because of the scale of suffering in the Democratic Republic of Congo over the past 10 years, its conflict has widely been described as the worst humanitarian disaster since the Second World War. Unlike that war, however, the primary tools of violent death in the DRC have been small arms and light weapons. Mutu says her work contains elements and references to violence, but my work is not about violence, she says. It concerns what brings about violence and ideas of power, female power, how history is proscribed or worked out on the bodies of women. Erin reports that this month, 7 soldiers in the Congolese army were sentenced to life in prison for crimes against humanity, including the mass rape of at least 119 women in the northwestern province of Ekatur. But the military garrison court in Sango Mboyo, 600 kilometers northeast of the provincial capital, acquitted 5 other soldiers of similar charges. Mutu says she positions herself as a violator. Quote, I position myself as a violator, she says, a person who destroys. There's something horribly satisfying about it. People have to clean up after you. Someone has to come around to heal the wall, and it takes a lot to repair. It's also about creating that cycle of responsibility that's part of the performance of this piece. Women's bodies are like sensitive charts. They indicate how a society feels about itself. End quote. The International Crisis Group expresses concern that the uneven balance of power in Katanga Province, as well as the mismanagement of the natural resources, have fueled tensions between northerners and southerners. Election campaigning has reignited old tensions between native Katangans and immigrant Luba from Kasai Province, which degenerated into ethnic cleansing in the past. Maimai militias, formed to fight Rwandan-backed rebels during the 1998 war, have also become a major source of violence. The mismanagement of Congo's resources is a story in itself. The Congo is a rich place. Gold, uranium, coltan, timber, diamonds. In a report last year, Human Rights Watch noted that Uganda exports $60 million worth of gold annually, even though the country only produces some $25,000 worth and records no legal imports. The balance of Uganda's exports, according to the Curse of Gold, is mined in the Congo by impoverished villagers. An Indian gold trader in Mongbualu, David Dahl, says gold supply chains in Ituri province are highly organized and controlled by wealthy businessmen abroad who make use of local agents. Though you will not find a single company working in Ituri province, he says, there are hundreds of independent agents on the ground working for a single patron. He adds that payoffs to customs and border officials facilitate the illegal export of gold. Dahl claims that foreign mineral firms prefer to commission agents in Congo rather than bring costly mining equipment to a country where ethnic tensions are always on the verge of exploding into violence. Nobody is willing to invest in such an unstable country, he says. Using agents is a business model that has worked. About Mutu's installation at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, Patel concludes that, quote, there is a deeply satisfying aesthetic fused with a radical politics here, a holy mess that draws us into the best kind of head game, one that forces us to re-examine our conditioned responses to the imagery that surrounds us. The UN currently reports that 47 countries contribute to a total of 16,193 peacekeepers in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The largest contingents come from Pakistan, India, South Africa, Uruguay, and Bangladesh. No longer a peacekeeper to the world, Canada contributes 8 military observers. Gerald Kaplan, a Canadian expert on the Rwandan genocide, says most people still don't realize that without a century of Western interference, there'd have been no genocide as we know it, or that Western governments could easily have prevented the entire genocidal conspiracy from being executed. Unlike Rwanda, he says, all the world knows what's happening in Darfur. Remember Darfur? The Bush administration and both houses of the American Congress have declared formally that Darfur is a genocide, yet 3 years later, the situation continues to deteriorate. Until the Boxing Day tsunami, Darfur was on the news every night. This year, the Canadian media obsesses about Afghanistan. This edition of World Report has been archived on the World Report website at cjly.net/worldreport, where you can get it either as a podcast or in raw MP3 format. There are also links to recommended sources for further reading if you're interested. To comment or suggest a story, send email to earthling@cjly.net, attention World Report, or to Box 767, Nelson, British Columbia, Canada, V1L5R4, attention World Report. I'm Jim Terrell at Kootenai Co-op Radio. Thanks for listening.